Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hey, Trojan fans, welcome to a special edition of the Peristyle Podcast. One last review of that really not pleasant USC-Arizona State game. We've got a couple of former Trojan football players. I want to help break down the game. They were both there. Terrell Thomas, former USC defensive back, and New York Giant, won a Super Bowl there. Also, Shane Foley, former USC quarterback. We've had him on the podcast numerous times. We welcome in right now, Shane. You can follow him on Twitter, at ShaneFoley_USC. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, buddy. I'm hanging in there. How about yourself?
Yeah, just about, you know, I guess like everybody else, just hanging in there. But it's been, we've had better days.
Yes, indeed. We have indeed. It's certainly a lot of emotion running hot right now. Definitely, I've seen a lot of that lately.
Yeah, lots to talk about this game. And, you know, people obviously aren't real happy. There's a lot of criticism with the coaching staff, and I'm seeing it all over the place. You know, I mean, there's people complain about just about everything. And I think when you get a loss like this, that kind of happens. Maybe we'll just start off with, you know, what were you thinking when you walked out, you know, just and saw what happened in the Coliseum there? What were your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, it's hard to really think in a situation like that. I mean, really – you know, you take a look around at the expressions, the people are shell-shocked. I mean, losing like that in that fashion was just really hard to deal with. I think the pain that you feel as a former player, as a fan, as a, you know, I'm sure as, you know, the current team is feeling deeply. Just a really tough, ugly way to lose, and just a very frustrating experience. It's really kind of a helpless feeling. You know, obviously no time left to do anything. You look up there on the clock and it's 38-34 with all zeros up there with nothing to be able to do about it, except, you know, I guess all you can do is look at the film, take a look at what you can do better and focus on getting better quickly, because you can't wallow in this. You got, you know, you got a big game, which is going to be a hornet's nest in Tucson next Saturday. But, you know, this game was just, you know, I was with my wife and with a guy that played baseball at SC and his wife and a number of people, and everybody just was speechless. You know, I guess that's about all you could say. It was really, really frustrating.
Yeah, we were down on the field, and you could it was really interesting to see. Everyone was stunned. You look at the crowd, and people weren't even leaving. They were just kind of like, they didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to think. It was very bizarre, and I just don't remember I don't know, good or bad, but the last few years there have been some really historic losses, like unique, giving up the most this or the most that, or the, you know, your biggest favorite or whatever it was. And this just seemed like another one. You know, Steve Sarkisian saying he doesn't remember ever seeing a Hail Mary work and then have one at the Coliseum 2 weeks in a row work. You know, one was nice for USC going in the half. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world. And then one was obviously the greatest thing in the world for Arizona State beating USC. But just the I think just people were stunned. They couldn't believe here is another crazy loss, another unique loss, another historic loss. They're just not used to seeing that many in you know, so few, such few years. There have been so many of those.
Well, I think, you know, certainly just the way the game unfolded, you know, certainly with the Trojans being up 9 at two different junctures, 27-18, and then obviously cutting the lead, ASU did, on a 98-yard drive to cut it to 27-25, and then Buck Allen shaking loose and going for a 53-yard touchdown to go up 9 again with everybody feeling good. And, you know, even the announcer on the replay is talking about, well, lights out, you know, game's done, and kind of ices it. And then, you know, obviously the very next play after the kickoff, you know, goes for a 73-yard touchdown. And so, you know, obviously emotions just going up and down, and certainly getting the ball back and going into a very, very conservative style, you know, playing not to lose down the stretch, and really playing against the clock, not against the opponent, and giving them another opportunity and having an 18-yard punt go off Kessler's leg you know, for an 18-yard punt, giving them, you know, pretty nice field position to start that last drive and to really tee it up with very, very small amount of time left. I think it was 18 seconds and no timeouts. And, you know, they hit a pass down there to set up the final play and having that 46-yard touchdown pass. I mean, really, you know, it's being called a Hail Mary. I mean, it was a very unique Hail Mary because – obviously, it didn't look like the Trojans had a lot of guys down there in position to make a play. And so, you know, it looked like there was personnel issues, you know, that I you know, look at it as a former player. Personnel issues, having Hayes Pollard back down there as a middle linebacker, you know, waiting for the ball to fall into the breadbasket and, you know, not having anybody up there to even go and contest the football was a problem. And so, you know, obviously – Jalen Strong going up and making a huge play and really having a line in that ball and going up and snatching it out of the air without anybody else even going up to contest it whatsoever was just shocking, I think. Just as you said, it was really a situation where, you know, the emotions went back and forth. And, you know, I think that you do have to credit ASU. You have to credit their quarterback, you know, having only a second start, throwing for 488 against UCLA, and then having a career night. You know, the USC defense, the vaunted pass defense that had only given up, no touchdowns throwing, and then giving up five and having a historic night. I think this is the most touchdowns thrown against the Trojan defense. I know there was a number of guys that have thrown for four, but, you know, it was a career night, and I think surpassed only by Joe Theismann back in the early 70s for throwing for more yards against the Trojans. So, just really a shocking night on a lot of different levels on a lot of fronts. But, you know, I think it's shared blame. You know, I think coaches have to take a lot of the blame in this, you know, technique and personnel and defenses called, you know, when no deep safeties, you know, down the stretch on that 73-yard touchdown play. We talked about that before the call. You know, certainly Kevon Seymour is been called out by some, leaving his feet and not playing the man. And, you know, certainly in retrospect, hindsight's 20/20, he should have made a tackle on it. But at the end of the day, why is there no safety back there in that? You know, Gerald Bowman's coming over from the other side of the field, has no shot on that receiver, you know, making the play. Why are they not in a cover two with the safety over the top of that play? And it just does not make any sense. And so I think that's part of I think a lot of the frustration that's out there, certainly with me, is, you know, just not really being in the right positions and having the right, some of the right schemes to play in that type of setting and scenario there at the end.
Yeah, it's, I mean, hard to argue with any of that. Maybe we could touch on some offensive plays, some defensive plays, and some special team stuff just to kind of round out the coverage of this and get your thoughts on stuff. But offensively, you know, Cody Kessler kind of backed up a little bit. There was a bunch of drops. You've probably experienced that in your quarterbacking days. And, you know, he was completing over 70% of his passes, didn't in this game. You know, had a pretty good running game with Buck Allen, but it just seemed inconsistent. What was your overall assessment of how the offense played throughout the day?
You know, it did not seem like they were able to really get into a rhythm. You know, I think that certainly the drops that you talked about, very uncharacteristic from what we've seen so far and last year. Some you know, plays as a quarterback you can't control. You got to just, you know, get those guys going and tell them, hey, come back, you know, don't dwell on that. Come back and make the next one and let's go. But I think that Cody, I think, was not quite in his rhythm. I mean, he you know, threw some balls that I think early on in the game that just didn't look like they were coming off his hand like they normally do. Just, you know, kind of overthrowing some guys. And just wasn't really as sharp and as crisp as we've seen in the past. I think that it was a gritty performance. Obviously, that run there that, you know, on the first and goal, running it in was a big play. And so, you know, a lot of heart and determination. And I think, you know, still didn't have any turnovers. He did have, you know, obviously interception drop too. He didn't just have receivers drop passes, but there was an interception drop. But, you know, still doesn't have any interceptions on the year. He's been an efficient quarterback. And still does have a lot of, you know, he has a lot of moxie and ability to move within the pocket. He did miss a blitz that came from the weak side to his backside, and didn't recognize a coverage, so he missed that, which he hasn't done often this year, where a guy just came completely unblocked, and it's a hot read, and you got to get the ball out of your hand. But, you know, obviously I think the running game, when you talk about that, you see Buck Allen and Justin Davis, I think, both running the ball hard, and certainly in the second half when they were pounding the football, I think that to me was – later in the game at 27-18, when USC had the ball and ran about seven or eight different run plays. Justin Davis started off the drive, and then Buck Allen came in about halfway through, and they were just pounding the football. And on that third and two, whether it was a called play by Sarkisian or whether it was an option read play by Cody Kessler, I think going out to the flat with the defensive backs jumping the routes as much as they were, all night, actually. That's one of the issues that I've got, and we can chat about that in a minute. But, taking that six-yard loss at that time right there and borderline field position opportunity, obviously Hadarius hit some big field goals with a 52- and 53-yarder this year, but really opting to punt at that point right there rather than getting any points and finishing that drive. I think that, to me, certainly the defense has got to share a lot of the blame for this, especially down the stretch when things really just got out of control. But, that play right there was an opportunity to continue that drive, to at least get a field goal, which puts you up 30-18, or a touchdown, obviously, which I think would be a backbreaker at that point, 34-18. There was no quit in Arizona State, and certainly not insinuating that there would be, but I think that drive right there certainly would have made a huge difference in the outcome of the football game. Regarding the passing, other than really overthrowing Juju Smith early in the game and missing, overthrowing him, and then kind of the cover two corner, post corner route that Darius Rogers dropped right near the goal line, which would have been a touchdown or, right at the goal line, we didn't really see any stretching of the passing game again. And, I know we've got young guys up front. I know there's a rotation with, your listeners know, with three true freshmen that are in that rotation with Lobendon, Talamaivo, and Mama. And, I know there's been, some interchanging there, but at the same time, you've got Cody in a shotgun formation a lot of the time. And I think there's, when you take a look back at the first game of the season, which really looked like kind of the brand of football that Coach Sarkisian described when he came in, was stretching the football. They threw the ball to, 10 different receivers, and I think that's something that I think people have been kind of looking for again. And, not necessarily always having to, run the hurry up tempo that he's talking about, because you do have a defense that doesn't get a lot of rest. And I know they slowed the game down and were very deliberate down the stretch to try to give his defense some more rest, which didn't obviously work too well with the results. But, I think that premise can be effective at times, but at the same time, I think when you've got defensive backs like Arizona State was doing, sitting down on routes, sitting down, and playing up tight, you've got their strong safety, I think, finished with 20 tackles, coming up and making plays. That's when you've got an aggressive defense that's coming up and trying to play physical football and stop the run and play up close to the line of scrimmage with the talented guys that you've got at receiver, obviously Nelson Agholor, Juju Smith, on down the line, Darius Rogers, Steven Mitchell, obviously got his first catch as a Trojan with a J&A out. But, I think you've got a lot of opportunities to exploit a defense that's trying to play that physically and really trying to attack. And I did think they did a pretty decent job getting the ball out of the backfield. Buck Allen did have a drop in the game as well, but the wheel route to him was a big, big play. On a touchdown drive. And so I think, distributing the football out of the backfield looked good. But that's really kind of what I summed up and took from the offense. Just a lot of opportunities, I think, that we did not seize.
Defensively, a little different story. The fact that 1 week against Boston College, you can give up the most yards in, decades on the ground, and then a couple weeks later, give up the most yards in decades through the air. Record-setting performances for for different teams on different sides of the ball. I mean, different aspects of the game, the run game or the pass game. I mean, what did you see out of this defense? There was positives of being able to shut down a DJ Foster, but you know, obviously letting the backup quarterback Berkovici go crazy and throw for 510 yards can't be encouraging.
No, not at all. And certainly, you know, heard from a lot of former teammates and players, you know, prior to me playing, that really, I don't want to say offended, but we're really disappointed in you know, just how our defense got gashed. And so, you know, as you talked about, the Boston College game was stunning for a whole nother reason. 452 yards given up out there on the road was unbelievable. And then, you know, obviously a lot of talk about the Trojans not giving up a touchdown pass to give up five was very, very disappointing. So, you know, I think it's something that, you know, obviously Coach Sarkisian talked about the front seven a lot, you know, going into the season. And you know, obviously I know Bigelow got hurt and Jabari Ruffin got hurt. So we had a couple of injuries to an already thin front seven, but even with that being the case, Ryan, you know, he talked a lot about this front seven being the strength of this football team and being able to really compete with any of the offenses out there and being as strong. He'd put them up against any front seven in the country, including the SEC, et cetera, which is obviously known for their front seven defenses. And it just hasn't really materialized. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I know we're in the lower, you know, 100, 115 in sacks. You know, the sacks, no pressure on the quarterback is, you know, to have a guy and give Berkovici credit. I mean, he played a tremendous game, especially down the stretch, showed a lot of mental toughness, you know, moved within the pocket to buy a little bit of time. But, you know, Scott Felix had two sacks. One got taken away by a Chris Hawkins holding penalty, which I believe is his third one in a second, you know, 2 weeks. But, you know, that was negated, but we're just not getting enough pressure on the quarterback. And that's something that has to improve, playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, pushing, you know, winning the battles up front and getting pressure on the opposing quarterbacks. And that's going to have to be something that they're going to have to get better at quickly. So that to me, first and foremost, that's what I look at and see, is just not, you know, not really interfering and disrupting a quarterback. I mean, even, you know, when you take a look at even some of the best quarterbacks that have ever played, you know, you mentioned Terrell Thomas. I'm not sure if he was on the Giant team when they played the Patriots, you know, but obviously even Tom Brady, you know, can get off of his game and get disrupted and that kind of thing. And that's what you have to be able to do. I mean, it's a cliche, but the best pass defense is a great pass rush. I've said it again. I write about it in the Foley report, and that's something that just needs to improve. I mean, as far as, you know, as far as I think, the, you know, the 3-4 defense, to me, you know, it's still kind of a work in progress. I mean, I think that, you know, you've got to have dominant linebackers in a 3-4 defense, and certainly Hayes Pillard and Sorrow in the middle. I mean, they're active linebackers. You know, if you take a look at, you know, a dominant defense or, you know, dominant linebackers, you know, at a time when you had Clay Matthews and Cushing and Malaluga, Thomas Williams kind of as the fourth guy, you know, obviously it was a different defensive scheme, but you've got to have the right players to kind of execute against the types of schemes that you're going to see. And clearly we had some success defending the run. They hopped off that pretty early, and they've been a very strong running team, you know, year to date in the conference and outside of the conference. So we had some, you know, success with that. The Trojans did, but, you know, at the end of the day, giving up the big plays was really the difference in this game. You know, when you boil it down and you take a look at, you know, what ASU was able to do, I think the average, you know, 19 yards a catch. Berkovici was 27 of 45 for 510 yards. So it really equates to about 18.9 yards a catch. And just huge plays, especially down the stretch, were really disappointing. You know, one of the things I'd also point out, Ryan, is, you know, you had the 77-yard touchdown earlier in the game to Strong, and then there were probably two or three other plays where they had receivers, you know, the running back Foster, beyond our defensive backs. You know, definitely had a step to two steps past our defensive backs and just missed. I mean, so there were several other plays where, you know, where our defensive backs were, you know, had you know, they had a couple steps behind them. So there's certainly some concern going forward, and, you know, certainly he's going to have to get that dealt with and fixed right away.
And then one last one for you. They want to talk some special teams, and I guess the weirdest aspect of special teams was seeing Cody Kessler, who never punted in his college career. We've never seen him punt in practice ever. He did punt a little bit in high school, from what I was told, and goes out there and punts four times. And what seems to be like kind of a trick play, it's kind of like running four flea flickers in a game. You know, the fact that they run the quick punt like four different times, I don't think I've ever seen that in a football game before. I don't know if they ever asked you to do that, but I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, there was some good special teams plays, like Nelson Aguilar returning that punt for a touchdown. But
sure,
to me, there's so many bad ones mixed in there. It seems like it's this wild swing. I'd rather see kind of consistent special teams play as opposed to a couple really good ones followed by a whole bunch of bad ones.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I mean, some of the statistics, I mean, I was kind of looking at some of the stuff for my writing, what I do, but I mean, the first four games, they had 37, you know, punt return yards, and, you know, that was 53 yards by Aguilar in the first quarter was, you know, was a huge return and a big play. But, you know, I think our kickoff return is, you know, somewhere around 119, 120 in the country with total return yards. And, you know, you've got explosive guys like Aguilar and Adoree Jackson returning the football back there. You know, we obviously had trouble covering, you know, the kickoff against Oregon State where they took it back. And, you know, we gave up a couple long, you know, to start the game to Middlebrooks. I mean, you know, running it back to the 50. So I think we're having problems in coverage. Certainly haven't, you know, haven't been explosive on the return short of Aguilar returning that punt. But I think the punting for Kessler, I don't know. You know, I don't know what the answer is on that. You know, they talked about the long snapper. I heard that being talked about, you know, post-game. But Alvarado punted twice. You know, he had a 65-yard punt. He had a 54-yard punt. And obviously, he's had some success placing the ball, you know, inside the, you know, inside the 20 this year and in the past. So, you know, I don't really know where that came from or what the situation was, you know. And if that's done once, okay, you know, that can take a defense by surprise. But I mean, that really kind of became their default plan, you know, with the quarterback with Kessler punting. And two of those, as you know, they rolled back into the end zone and were touchbacks. So I think, that, you know, the net gain in field position was maybe 15 or 20 yards. I mean, you know, obviously the net on that was atrocious. And then, the last one, you know, off the side of his leg, gave him the ball, I think, on the 28 to start that last drive, which definitely teed up, you know, one completion, and it teed up the opportunity to get the ball downfield for the go-ahead touchdown. So, you know, I think there's some things that I think the coaches need to go back and really kind of take a look at and identify, you know, what the issue is or what the issues were, you know, and really be clear about what they need to do. I think personnel-wise, you know, I think timeout management, certainly that's been talked a lot about, you know, with the timeouts, but having the right personnel on the field. I mean, again, you know, having Hayes Pollard down there, you know, basically, you know, looking, waiting for the ball to come down and hit him on the helmet or, you know, for him to catch it. You know, it's just not the right personnel. And, you know, again, going back to, you know, that 73-yard touchdown to cut the lead 34-32. I mean, I don't know what defense they were in, a man defense, but, you know, I don't know why you're playing man down there with, you know, with less than 3 minutes to play in the football game. So, you know, there's just some things I think, that, you know, again, it was a shared deal, a lot of emotion running high out there, but a shared deal with execution, with the coaching decisions, with the personnel that they had, you know, the schemes that they had in play. You know, they've got to find ways, again, I'm going back to it, you got to find ways to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. You know, you're playing some of the best quarterbacks in the country. You know, Connor Holiday just threw for 734 yards and set the conference record. You've got Goff at Cal, you know, going off. You know, you've got, you know, obviously Hundley at UCLA. throwing for 70+% 72-73% leading the country right now, and passing efficiency, throwing the ball, completion percentage. So, you know, you've got a lot of tremendous quarterbacks. Everett Golson is back, you know, just threw the winning touchdown pass on 4th and 11 to beat Stanford. You know, you're not going to have a weekend off, you know, with the guys you see. You know, Anu Solomon, watched him carve up Oregon, you know, and do a great job at, you know, in Eugene. You and I both know how tough that is to go up there and get a W, and they didn't squeak by. They didn't luck that one out up there. And they came out in the second half and punched him in the mouth and didn't back down and really did a tremendous job playing against the Wildcats. So, you know, when you take a look forward starting this Saturday, it's not going to get any easier. And that's going to be a hornet's nest out there. Arizona's number 10 in the country. You know, jump from being unranked to 10 in the country, and obviously a shakeup in the entire, you know, college football scene with, you know, 5 out of the top 10 teams going down. But, you know, Ryan, it just is, you know, a situation where they're going to have to get some of these things fixed and fixed quickly. And I think everybody has to really take ownership with what went wrong. You know, you can't sweep this under the carpet. It was an ugly loss. It was a tough loss when the Trojans were trying to be, you know, be 3-0 in the conference for the first time since 06. So there was a lot to be playing for. It was a tough way to go down. But right now, you know, it's how you rebound, how you respond. And, you know, they've got to get the defense fixed. You know, it's a shared loss. I mean, at the end of the day, they talk a lot about identity. You know, I believe each team, you know, each year has a new personality, creates their own identity, all of those types of things. But right now our, you know, Trojans' identity is we can't get a stop when we need one, and we're giving up big plays, you know, both in the running game and in the passing game. And, you know, obviously the offense needs to be able to finish drives when it counts too. It's a shared effort. You know, I think, you know, the defense clearly was, you know, giving up, you know, whatever, 200 plus yards in the last 3 minutes, you know, certainly, was the GOAT in this game. But, you know, it's a shared effort, you know, and if I truly believe if we continued pounding the rock and finished that drive with a touchdown there at 27-18 to go up 34-18, you know, I think that's going to be the ball game. So, you know, it was a frustrating night. I think you can hear it in my voice, and I know you've been frustrated too. Everybody has. But, you know, I will say this, you know, we talked about it a little bit before, you know, Sarkisian had the time up there in Washington, turned around an 0-12 team, went 5-7. Next 3 years after that, they go 7-5. Last year, you know, they go 8-4, 9-4, but he had already left at that point. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it. There hasn't been a real long leash for winning and coming in and winning. But, you know, I will say this, you know, he's got to, you know, we need to see the improvement going forward, you know, with these guys, you know, in the right schemes, making plays, playing together, having some leadership, you know, on the team, you know, from the coaching, you know, from the coaches, from the seniors and the upperclassmen being leaders and stepping up and, you know, getting better down the stretch. We're almost really at the halfway point. And a couple of tough losses, ugly losses, you know, and it's got to get better. And so, you know, obviously, I've said this before and you've heard me say it. I think the second year is really the year that you expect to see, you know, a coach really turn things around. I mean, obviously, different time, but, you know, Pete turned the Trojans around going 6-6 his first year and then going 11-2. And, you know, seeing Urban Meyer take over a Ronza, Florida team back in the day and, you know, a team that was basically left for dead and turning those guys into a national power when he was down there too. So, you know, you've got to get some momentum. They still are, you know, again, Trojans aren't about moral victories or about creating excuses, but, you know, they are playing with 55. And, you know, I don't like hearing it either, but it is true. And they've got to, and I think they've got to make the most of, you know, what they can do with what they've got. And it is about winning now. You know, I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. You know, we got to find ways to win and do it. And it all starts this Saturday.
All right. Well, great stuff. Former USC quarterback Shane Foley. You can follow him on Twitter, Shane Foley_USC. He likes to tweet about what's going on with this team. So you definitely should follow him. And Got some good stuff there. And check out the Fuller report, too. He'll tweet out the link to that. So, Shane, thanks very much for coming on the show. It wasn't a very inspiring, uplifting edition of the podcast. But, you know, we got to roll with the good, roll with the bad. And wanted to, love to get your opinions on stuff. So thanks for coming on.
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Shane at Shane, at Shane Foley underscore USC. You can follow him on Twitter. We'll be back in 1 minute talking with Terrell Thomas.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We have former USC quarterback and New York Giant football player, Terrell Thomas, who knows a lot about this USC football program, secondary in particular, and he was at the game on Saturday, so we wanted to catch up with Terrell and get his thoughts on what was going on. Thanks for joining the show, Terrell.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while, but you got to go back to a USC game. You're a local guy, Rancho Cucamonga. How often do you get back to see USC play?
You know what? As much as I can. It was hard when I was playing. Sometimes the bye week didn't fall on the week of a home game. But every time I can, I try to get out there. Or especially that Shark is back. And I feel like a new sense of Trojan pride and back to the old way is coming back around.
You can follow him on Twitter, at Terrell Thomas. It's T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Thomas24. So at Terrell Thomas24. And you're currently a free agent. We can talk about this real quick. You're currently a free agent. You spent many years with the New York Giants. And I think one of the only players that come back from three devastating knee injuries and still play in the NFL. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. God has blessed me. And I was thankful to come back from those knee injuries. And I'm still training. Still hoping for another opportunity, setting up my second career, exploring different avenues, thinking about getting back to school, getting my master's. Other than that, man, just hoping that I get that call one day. It's a long season, but won't hold on too long.
All right, well, we'll wish you the best of luck and get back out there. And probably don't want to play too long, man. You see the long-term effects of some of these guys. But maybe not for corners as bad, but yeah. Try to tackle some of those, but try to tackle Marshawn Lynch and stuff. That can't be fun.
Nah, definitely. The toll of the NFL will definitely add up to you. Obviously, the knee injuries played a pivotal role in my career. So I'm blessed to get 6 years in, and if I never played another down, I'm just thankful for the opportunity.
All right. Well, let's. I want to talk about the game, and we were exchanging a few text messages there. We can kind of focus on the defense and your specialty. What did you think? It's strange for me to see a defense that 1 week against Boston College gives up historic rushing yards, 452, and then another week, a team that hadn't given up a touchdown pass all year gives up 510 yards passing to a backup quarterback. I mean, what did you take away from that and the way this defense has played?
Well, it seemed like over the bye week, their focus was let's stop the run. I remember reading the article that was key to the game. They did a great job of it. They only had 30 yards rushing, but at the same time, if you look at the stat board, they only got 30 yards rushing. Get deep, just keep them in front of you and tackle. But to give up explosive plays like that, it's hard to win as a team. It takes the energy out of the whole team, offense and defense. It was a battle. I felt like they played strong to the fourth corner. They're a young group of guys, and they're still learning the new system and still playing. But obviously, if you want to be a great team, you want to win the Pac-12 championship, you can't give up big plays like that.
Have you been part of any defenses that had done that, where you say, okay, we're going to focus on the run, you do a good job, or the pass, whatever it is, but they, I don't know if it's worth it if you can stop one aspect and the other aspect goes absolutely bonkers and goes goes crazy. At some point, you kind of have to try to, even it out a little bit, I guess you'd say.
Well, I think everybody has a game plan going into the week. And sometimes, if their run game is is how they move the offense, set up to play action. And you want to take away that run and make it one-dimensional and make them beat you passing. But at the same time, you know, if they start to kill you in the passing game, their concepts are just hitting you. If you have an off day, then you have to make adjustments. And I think that's one thing that I lacked Saturday is that they made no adjustments. I remember texting you and tweeting, like, they have 30 yards passing. Why are we letting them throw touchdowns over our head? The safety should have been 30 yards deep because there's nothing that you need to come up for to tackle other than to play the deep ball. And obviously the corners were a little aggressive, maybe peeking too much. You can say it was the linger of the bye. You know, they're a young team at the end of the day. You know, there's still freshmen and sophomores out there, which is good because it's growing pains that they'll get better. But obviously when you give up 512 yards to a backup quarterback at home, coming off a loss of Boston College, it doesn't look too good for the program.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the technique stuff, and maybe you could kind of share what your thoughts are on that. And I don't know if you're talking about strategy-wise, like the final drive or the second to the last drive when Kevon Seymour went for the pick. Was that bad technique? Was that bad scheme? And maybe kind of describe what you were talking about there.
Well, it was a little bit of both, to be honest with you. The last play, you have the middle linebacker back there, and obviously it's a golden rule. You don't try to fair catch the deep ball. And, you know, Hayes is a great player, a great Trojan, and I'm pretty sure he wants that play back, and he would do it 1,000 times differently. But you got to knock that ball down. You know, it's just the biggest play that you practice that every week that, you know, you get up there, you box out, and knock the play down. But obviously the communication was wrong on the sideline. A lot of guys were playing one coverage and others were playing, you know, different. And, you know, it came and it showed, you know, I mean, to give up a 73-yard touchdown or however long it was and then a Hail Mary to win the game. You know, if you just tackle those plays, you know, the clock runs and you make it a lot harder for those teams. So, obviously, the adjustments weren't made on the field through the coaching staff to the players. Or maybe the players were just, you know, lost out there. But, you know, it was just as a former player and as a DB, you never want to see a team get beat like that, especially when they have 30 yards rush. I think that's so obvious and evident to any football player that if we're stopping a run, they can't run the ball, then we just need to stop the pass. And we might not be able to stop the pass. They might make completions, but we're going to tackle everything. We're going to kill all the yak. And when you allow them to get yards after the catch and make plays like that, you know, it just takes the momentum out of the team. And obviously that's the reason why they lost the game.
So to you, that's more of a kind of a scheme thing, because for me, and when I saw Kevon Seymour try to make that play, it probably, you know, it wasn't the right move. But I'm looking at a guy who's, you know, there's effort, he's trying to make a play, but there shouldn't be this thin margin of error that if he misses it, there's nobody behind him. I mean, to me, that seems more of a scheme thing. I know he didn't, you know, execute the correct, maybe he was told to keep guys in front of him, but even if he couldn't, if he, you know, even if he kept him in front of him and missed a tackle, there shouldn't be green grass after him. You'd think there'd be someone there to kind of as a stopgap.
No, you're absolutely right. It's called victory, universal football term for the last play of the game. In college and in the NFL, we practice it every week, every Friday and every Saturday. We went over it. And it's, you know, we will walk through it and jump it and let the receivers catch it. It's something you do that kind of play around, but, you know, it's a critical play that needs to be executed the right way. And for them to, you know, have two plays, you know, come in on the last play of the game, absolutely makes no sense. You know, it's a great coaching staff, starts doing a great job with the guys. You know, at the same time, again, they're young guys, but obviously victory should have been called. Somebody should have been jammed at the point at the line of scrimmage when the play started. There should have been three guys deep. There should have been three guys waiting for the bounce, two guys in front, and Hayes the one to knock it down. That's literally general victory last play, how you knock the ball down for the Hail Mary. You watched the previous week when they beat, Oregon State at home. When we threw the Hail Mary, they had guys that said, that's how it should look, but our guy went out and made a play. And that happens. It's football. You never know what can happen. You throw the ball up. But when it came to the Arizona State game, it was literally, we were just lost out there. You know, you saw Chris Hawkins kind of running up, kind of lost, and Hayes was the only guy out there. And poor Bill, a linebacker, should never be the jump man. He should be the guy, you know, jamming somebody, and you should have Sue or Brown or somebody, even a receiver back there that, you know, can jump really high and either catch it or knock it down. I know that's what we did when I played. We had Dwayne Jarrett or Patrick Turner back there. They were 6'4", and they can jump and just knock the ball down.
Yeah, it makes sense. Oh, so that's on the victory play. That's on the final play. But the one, the touchdown leading up to that where Kevon Seymour kind of dove and tried to make a play, do you blame him for kind of doing that, or is that, excuse me, a young guy trying to make a play?
I speak on it on the youth, to be honest with you, man. I remember my second year in the league, we were getting blown out by Carolina, and I could have easily tackled Jonathan Stewart, but I tried to go for the strip, and he ended up taking off for another 4 yards for a touchdown. And the coach ripped me, but he understood exactly what I was doing. I was a young guy trying to make a play. You know, we were down and out, and I'm sitting there trying to make a play, and you know, he should have just made the tackle, playing himself. But you make the tackle, you line up again, and that's a different ball game.
You mentioned the communication problems there a little bit. Does that happen a lot? And you know, we talk about offensive play calling a lot more than you talk about defensive play calling. Maybe just people don't understand it as much. But when there's different plays coming in, how confusing can that be for a defender? And you know, do you kind of understand the confusion that was going on the field at the time?
It's very confusing because everybody has to be on the same accord, or if not, you get exposed. It's, you know, 10 people are playing man, and that one corner's playing zone, and he lets them out of the zone, then that's the difference of the play, and which happens a lot in football. But at the end of the day, this is the last play of the game. You know, nothing really needs to be communicated. It's victory formation. Line up, jam the point, 3D, knock the ball down, we win. Thank God, you know, but that didn't happen. And they're a young team, and it's a great coaching situation, and we'll learn from it. And we'll get better. Obviously, we want to get that win back, so we have a better standing in the Pac-12. But, you know, they're a young team. They're playing a lot of freshmen, which will help us, you know, in the long run. But, you know, these are growing pains of having young guys in there and counting on them. Because, let's remember, man, they're 18 years old. You know, you got a Dory who's going both ways. He has a lot on his plate, you know. And they're a young team, got put in a terrible situation, and I promise you it won't happen again for a long time.
You talk about the young team, and it's a young coaching staff too. Only 5 games in at USC. The players start questioning when there's confusing decisions coming in, or they don't agree with the coverages or whatever it is. The players start questioning the coaching staff, maybe not publicly, but just kind of behind the scenes. Like, I'm not really sure I have confidence in what these guys are doing.
I think that's obvious. I think that's human nature that you start questioning. But I think Sharp's a great coach, and he will grab his players by the horn and get their attention and let them know that was on them and it won't happen again. That's what you do as a head coach. You let them know that, you know, that was my fault. Communication was my fault. We should have put you guys in a better position. And at the end of the day, the players got to hold themselves accountable too. You know, you have to study your playbook and know situations that, you know, we go over and know how to execute those situations. So, like I said, man, when you get a loss like this, man, the best thing that you come out of it, you get out of it, is that you get to learn from your mistakes. And going forward, these players will take this for the rest of their playing career, and they'll be able to execute that last play. You know, the touchdown before, yeah, it happens. You know, the touchdown in the first quarter, it happens. But that last play, you know, that's the difference in the game. And if you stop that one play, you win the ball game. And they're a good team. Give it to them. And they came out there and, you know, were resilient and played tough and held on strong. And, you know, maybe after that last touchdown, the defense kind of, you know, took a deep breath and kind of like, okay, we got this game won. And which happens, like I said, you know, I'm not blaming it on the youth, but we do have a bunch of young guys. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves when they started 2-0 and they beat Stanford at home. But, you know, I got a tough rest of the Pac-12 schedule coming up, so let's see how they finish.
You mentioned Sark a couple of times, and you know you were on the team when Sark was around, and I've talked to other former defensive players specifically that had a lot of, you know, good things to say about Sark, that he was a guy that had his office open, and even, you know, even though he's an offensive guy, he would take a linebacker and have him come in and talk about different plays they would call. Did you have a good experience when Sark was at USC?
Yeah, no doubt. Sark was a great coach, a great players coach. Always had his office open. Always talked to you on the field and whatnot. You know, he's the reason why I came to SC. He was my recruiting coach when I came out. Rush took him over a long time ago, so obviously I'm a big fan of his. And you know, I think he's just you know, he's a shade different than Coach Carroll. You know what I mean? I don't know if he has the full passion that Coach Carroll brings, but he definitely was a great part of our success, you know, when he was there. And I think he's going to do a great job for us in the coming future. And you have to think about it. You know, Coach Carroll went 6-6 his first year. Sark is still coming out of sanctions, and I think he's doing a good job for us. So I don't think there's any time for us to panic. You know, we lost to a pretty good team that just made a hell of a play at the end of the game, and we just got to learn to finish stronger.
You mentioned Dory Jackson, too, a couple minutes ago, and I wanted to get your thoughts on him. You know, being a true freshman and now starting at cornerback for SC, and there's some of it's the recruiting process, and you want to get your five-star players on the field, but he seems like he's able to, you know, to adapt and adjust to the next level. You move from one level to the next, high school to college, college to the NFL, there's always some kind of adjustment. He seems like he's done that well. What have you seen from Adoree Jackson so far?
You know, he's just a playmaker, and I love what they're doing with him. They're giving him a short practice and just allowing him to play. I wish I could have done the same thing when I was a freshman, but obviously he's a little bit more gifted, a little bit more mature, and I think they're doing the right thing with him, giving him small practices, giving the ball to him in space, and just allowing him to be the athlete that he is. I think he's going to be a great Trojan for us, and I think he might need to focus on one side of the ball a little bit more than another. But, I think what they're doing with him on offense and defense is great, and just allowing his true, you know, God-given athletic talent to show. And, you know, he's been a great player for us thus far.
Yeah, he actually didn't play offense for the first time this year against Arizona State. They, you know, I guess because he was starting at corner there. But I agree with you. I think it would be, you know, it's great that he could play both. And I think he's doing a good job on the kick returns. Maybe that's not as taxing, but if you want him to start at cornerback, to me, it seems like it's smart. And that's what they did in this game. Just let him play defense. And, you know, if you get a package or something, if you're up and you want him to play. But they really needed him to focus on the defensive side this week.
Yeah, that's what it seemed to be the case. I'm a little biased, you know. My man, Chris Hawkins, is from Rancho, so definitely want to see him out there getting the start. But, I think they do a good job of rotating everybody, getting everybody a fair chance to play and contribute. And that's the best way. Get everybody involved, and I'm happy to be a Trojan. I love what they're doing. They brought back the black cleats, you know, the tradition, and you know, everything that they're doing right now. I'm just excited for the new program, and I think in the next couple of years we'll be back in the national championship hunt.
What last thing I wanted to chat with you about is the, you know, the defensive backs themselves. And you mentioned Chris Hawkins. We talk about Seymour and you know, the cornerbacks there, Adoree Jackson. The three guys are kind of rotating in, and, you know, Chris wasn't starting, but he was playing a bunch, and they'll play in nickel. They're different kind of situations where they bring those guys in. And what are your overall thoughts on kind of their technique and how, you know, what you've seen them do well and what you think they probably need to do a better job going forward this season?
You know, I think they're solid. I think they're great tacklers. I think they need a little bit more better in their alignment. And more just their overall awareness of where they're at on the field. I think that difference in them making plays, sometimes they get a little bit lost in space, which happens. They have a new DB coach this year that is, you know, they're probably teaching new techniques. And, you know, it's a learning curve that happens, and it's just a part of the game. But, you know, I think our secondary has been solid. You know, everybody has a bad game, and this is what it was. You know, they've been, like you said, they never gave a touchdown pass the whole season until this game. So I think they'll look at this film, critique it really hard, and, you know, move forward and hopefully continue to be the you know, the solid secondary and, you know, the, you know, if you want to say it, the Legion of Boom of the USC defense.
Yeah, there was a few holding calls last week. There's, you know, one or two calls this week, too, on the defensive backs there. But it seems like they're changing the way they call defensive holding or legal contact. You're seeing it in the college and you see it in the NFL. It just seems like they're making it tougher every year on defensive backs.
Well, they want to see a lot of touchdowns. And, you know, as DBs, we have the hardest job on the field, and we just have to adjust, plain and simple. The way they're calling, you know, you can't be so aggressive no more. They're calling the NFL, and the NFL trickles down to college football. So you just have to critique, change the way you play and critique it a little bit, and you just, you know, you have to master it. You know, that's a part of being a football player, and especially a DB. And you can't let the holding calls get to you, you know. It happens. You know, you're going to get caught, you know. More than anything, you know, you just peek it in the backfield. You just got to get a little bit more disciplined with your eyes, and that comes with experience and playing time, and they'll get better.
All right. Well, he's former USC defensive back, former NFL, well, hopefully going to be a current NFL defensive back.
I like it.
Yeah. Terrell Thomas. You can follow him on Twitter at Terrell Thomas 24, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Thomas 24. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Terrell, and sharing your insights. It's great to get a former player's point of view, especially with the DBs.
Yes, sir, man. Anytime, Ryan. Have a good one.
All right. Well, thanks, Terrell, and thanks to Shane Foley, who was in the first part of the podcast. It's been a very special edition of the Peristyle Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.
You You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.